Daf Yud Amud Beis, the second widest line. We're continuing on the subject of Elisha, but a new point. So we mentioned last time that Elisha used to circle Eretz Yisrael, and on his travels, he would be hosted by a woman, just call her the Shunamis, a woman of a place called Shune. So now, Omar Abaye, Ve'itame Rabbi Yitzchok, either Abaye or Rabbi Yitzchok said, Haroitze Lehanois, if a person, meaning, if a Talmud Chacham, a Torah leader, Torah teacher, wishes to benefit from those who want to give him things, Yane, Ke'elisha, he can take it like Elisha did. As we see, Elisha accepted the hospitality of this woman and used to stay at her home free of charge. And if someone does not wish to accept benefits, so he shouldn't accept. Like Shmuel, meaning either way is acceptable. We don't say that accepting is considered not ethical. And on the same time, we don't say that a person who does not want to accept has to be worried. Maybe it looks conceited. Maybe it looks like snobby. No. Either way is fine. Now, either to accept or not to accept. People want to give him things. Let's see. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, Uchuvasoi haramasa Hisham beisoi. It says, Shmuel used to circle all of Eretz Yisrael, and he would return back to Ramah, Kisham Beisai, because there was his home. Now that seems a little bit extraneous. We know where Shmuel lived. Why does he have to stress that he would go back home because that's where he lived? The Omar Rabbi Yechanan says that when it says because there was his home, it doesn't mean when he returned back home. It means something else. When it describes that he would circle all of Eretz Yisrael and then he would ultimately return to Ramah, it says, because there was his home, it means on all of his travels, there was his home. Meaning what? He took everything he needed with him. He refused to accept anything as much as a night's lodging or a pillow for a night from anybody. He didn't want to. So they say he would circle all of Eretz Yisrael to judge Klal Yisrael, and he would ultimately return back to Ramah, to his home. And then it says Kisham Beisai, because that was his home. So Chazal is saying, it's not just telling us he would go back to Ramah because that was his home. It's saying, on all of his travels, that was his home. His home was with him wherever he was on his travels. So we're seeing two Hanhogas here. What? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He used to bring a tent with, went on a donkey, and he would bring a tent with all of his provisions, and yes, he would be completely non-dependent on anybody. Okay, so this is something to note. This is a lot of cause for discussion because this, in general, is a sensitive topic. Rav Dessler basically puts this down. He says this is a very classic dilemma that a person who wants to grow is faced with. A person is dedicating himself to get ahead in his Torah, etc. And he'll often face a dilemma. Is it better for me to cut time out of my learning and put some time into earning my own livelihood, and then I'll be able to care for myself and I won't be dependent on anybody else? Or is it better for me to completely dedicate to myself to my learning, to my growth, to my progress, and to accept other people's assistance in order to enable me to do that? And here the Gemara is saying that we see Elisha following the latter Mahalach, and we see Shmuel following the former Mahalach. Shmuel, he felt that because of the Kavod HaTorah, it would demean the dignity of the Torah if he were beholden to anybody. Also, more than that, the Rishonim say, didn't ever want to be in a position that he's beholden to somebody. Wanted to always be able to say what he has to say freely, without having to worry about a thing, without owing anybody favors, and therefore he remained completely aloof. Nobody was able to give him anything. So they say about the Briskerov. What? What's that? That's true. There's that too. Yet, we're going with the assumption that people presumably wanted to give Shmuel things. In general, that was the way it worked in those times. People wanted, he was busy. For example, let's say Shmuel comes to town. He's dedicating his life to circling amongst Klal Yisrael, just busy teaching, arbitrating, instructing. Many decent people will feel like they want to do something for him. Yeah, what's that? Right. Right, he refuses to accept. That's right. I think he could have rested assured that he wasn't putting people out. For example, often, with certain Hasidish Rebbe's, the way it works is, and let's say a famous Hasidish Rebbe travels overseas, you know where he stays? He stays by the Chassid who bids highest. By the Chassid who bids highest. That's where he'll stay. He has all of his institutions, right? The question is, let's say he's traveling to England, where is he going to stay? By the highest bidder. You heard sometimes, yes. People will bid even $200,000-$300,000 to have the Rebbe stay by them for 3 days. So, often there's no concern that the person is being put out. It's a very, very big covet for him. And that was what was going on with Elisha too. It was certainly a big covet for her. But yet, Shmuel refused. He didn't want. The Briskerov used to, when people would offer him things, he would always pay. And when people asked him why he always insisted on that, he would say, I end up paying. The cheapest way to pay is money.
Has there been a whole discussion about paying the Navi, like, to give you a reward? And you would pay him for that. It wouldn't be a free service necessarily.
I never heard of, I don't know. Maybe if people would volunteer that as a Pidyon Nefesh, that there was official charge. I never heard that.
It's official. That would be the thing that people want.
That's exactly what we're talking about. That's exactly what we're talking about. Shmuel refused. With Shmuel, there was no such thing.
How can he maintain this?
According to Rav Dessler, he put in a little bit of time somehow on the side. He had investments. Maybe he did computer programming. A little bit of time he would put in on the side, and he would earn his own income. So it's not. Whereas Elisha said, I would rather be not dip down into material affairs at all, and I would accept people helping me out. So Rav Dessler says these are two anhagas. Each one might depend on the nature of the person, etc. He says something interesting, which I think is all the more relevant in our times. He says that realistically speaking, a person first has to go through a period where he can just completely dedicate himself. A person really wants to become, has to go through a period where he first completely dedicates himself in order to really become proficient at just dedicating his life to spirituality. And at that period, it's good for him to accept. He can move from there to the next step, if he feels he's ready to do that, of saying, now, I am going to bite out a little bit of time and put time into earning a living for the purpose of Kavod HaTorah, in order to maintain Kavod HaTorah, which is challenging. It's challenging. I know from my own experience that I struggled with that. I started in Kollel, and reached a point where I didn't continue in Kol. I started making my parnasa, and I still I was adamant that I would manage to maintain a full day of learning nevertheless. It took me a good few years until I was able to get it properly balanced out. And I could say with certainty, if I hadn't started out with a good basis in Kailo for a good few years first, it would have never have worked. Continued shaky even after that, juggling the two. Very, very challenging. But without a first a basis in Kailo, when I didn't have to worry about it at all, it would have never have worked. So to an extent, it boils down to the type of person is. Whatever it is, what we're seeing here is that these are two mahalchim here. What's that? Part of the challenge was being very picky about which parnassas I would pick. Many times I had to draw on people's assistance in order to enable myself to find the right thing that I felt would fit with everything I wanted to be doing in life. So it was always with the vision of maybe I'll be able to get to a place where I won't have to. But so I very much identify when I saw Avdessler putting it that way, that to take the assistance in order to get myself on a track that I should be able to handle, it's very challenging. So how does this fit in with the Nisayna Matanis Yivra?
Whatever that means.
Okay, so the truth is, this is really part of a much broader discussion, the truth is. We'll mention this briefly, just because often you hear snippets. There's the famous opinion of the Rambam, which he presents very strongly in the Halachas, but at great length in his Pirush on Pirkei Avos, where he completely castigates the concept of taking support for Torah learning. Very, very strongly, yeah. At very great length, very strongly. And you often hear that cited when questioning the whole concept of Kollel, etc., etc. First, I just want to point something out. It's not a question on Kollel. If we're bringing in the Rambam, it's a question on the chief rabbis too. The same question. It has to be very clear. Any rabbi is exactly in the same category. According to the Rambam, the concept of a rabbi receiving a salary was completely illegitimate. And certainly, Koilo, etc., raising money for yeshivas, all that, according to the Rambam, is illegitimate. Taira? What? Sheikhat? What? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. Even when it comes to teaching Torah, you can take Schar Batala. When it comes to teaching, Schar Batala. But he's very strong about that. What's that? He says a lot more than us. He says, "Hareze chilal es Hashem, ubizo es haTorah, v'noitel chayov min olam haba." He says he has desecrated Hashem's name, he has disgraced the Torah, and he's losing his life in the next world. That's the way the Rambam is very, very strong on this, which certainly raises questions. And people like to throw the Rambam around. People like to throw the Rambam around. Because people like to attack. But, I don't know, generally when people come to me and ask me about the Rambam, I ask them, do you make Kiddush at Shal Shudas? I never met a person who does. But the Rambam also says you have to make Kiddush at Shal Shudas. I say, 1 minute, okay. Well, that's a question of halacha. You have to see what the Shulchan Aruch, right? Halacha funnels down through the Shulchan Aruch. You can't just start with the Rambam. You see, what does the Shulchan Aruch say? What do the Poiskim say? This is also in Hilchos Talmud Torah. You have to see what the Poiskim say. Nobody, in all other areas, do people just open up a Rambam and practice Halacha. You open up a Shulchan Aruch, right? You open up a Mishneh Berurah. So open a Shulchan Aruch. You open a Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Talmud Torah, and for some reason or the other, even though this is very prominently featured in the Rambam, in very strong terms in his Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Shulchan Aruch it's missing. Now you might say, okay, he didn't mention it. But that's not so. If you open the Rambam, Pirush on the Rambam, one of the main Pirushim on the Rambam is Kesef Mishneh, authored by who? Yosef Karo, author of the Shulchan Aruch. He authored one of the most primary Pirushim on the Rambam. When you open the Rambam there, you see Kesef Mishneh, one of the longest Kesef Mishnahs there is, in which he very, very strongly says that it always has been that Klal Yisrael, Rabbanim were paid, and that it always has been that Kehilas and Klal Yisrael were supporting Torah. And the Rambam cited many examples from the Gemara of people who worked, the famous instance of Hillel, right? Hillel was a woodchopper. So the Beis Yosef there basically comes and cites an equal or more amount of instances where you find that the people of the community would support their Torah leaders, would make it possible for them to just dedicate themselves to their Torah teaching. In fact, the Tashbis cites a halacha, and when a person is appointed to the head of the central yeshiva, then it was very clear, there was a central yeshiva in Babel. The Rosh Yeshiva, there was officially appointed, the God Lador. The halacha is that he has to be rich. What happens if he isn't? The Tzibur has to make him rich. That's what it says. Tzibur is mechuyev to make him rich. Everybody pays a tax. Mamish we get back to the other time. President of the United States. King of England. King of any country. Lives off the public. That people somehow don't look at it that way. This is a very, very distinguished and prestigious position, which should be set up in a way that the way the Tashbitz puts it is, imagine if the President of the United States was an altruistic guy. And he would not want to live off the public. So, the President of the United States spends a couple of hours a day working in an accounting firm near Washington, D.C. It would certainly take away from his influence the fact that he's just one of the guys. So therefore, Lemaisa, after a lot of discussion, the Tashbitz is already the first. The Tashbitz has 6 lengthy tshuvas addressing the subject. And he, Mamish, goes through with a fine-tooth comb all the instances in Shas where we find this. And therefore, the bottom line conclusion of the Poiskim is very clearly that we do not Paskim like the Rambam. Very clearly. So, it's even clearer than not making Kiddush at Shal Shudus. And the Kesef Mishnah himself suggests that the Rambam was referring to specific circumstances. The Rambam was referring to cases where a person decides, the Tzibur is not willing, and a person decides he's just going to cast himself on the Tzibur whether they like it or not. And he's going to say, look, I have no money. He's not willing to work. And they're not interested in supporting him. So, that's where the Rambam said what he said. Possibly, maybe yes, maybe not, but whatever it is, the clear conclusion of the Poiskim, all the way through the Poiskim, this has to be very clear, because people bang this Rambam around. It has to be very clear that the straight consensus of the Poiskim is that always has been the practice in Klal Yisrael before the Rambam's time, after the Rambam's time, that certainly the Torah leaders were supported, the Rabbanim were paid salaries, and not only that, you see already since the time of the Rishonim, the concept of Koilel, the Tashbitz, he has a tshuva which he sums it up, I translated it in case anybody wants it, let me know afterwards, I'll send it to you. The Tashbitz, after 6 lengthy tshuvas, he has one last tshuva summing it all up. He describes exactly all the different categories of how these things work. He says, yes, there's even a chiyuv for the tzibur, he says, to dedicate a fund. See, every kehillah, he says, should have a fund for people who just want to dedicate themselves to learning, even if they're not actually Rabbanim yet, because every tzibur would want to have as much Torah as they can amongst them. So the truth is that it's clear, at the end of the day, if we're talking pragmatically, any tzibur that really appreciates Torah, yes, communities invest, they're willing to shell out money for the things that they value, they want the things that they want to have, the things that they view as a cultural asset. So, the same thing applies here. And Lemaisa, the way it boils down at the bottom line in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah is that yes, there is a midas chasidus in a person managing to do both. It's a challenging thing. It's called a midas chasidus. And Rav Moshe Feinstein also says, basically like we saw Rav Dessler say before, that people who are interested in dedicating their lives to learning should not worry about the Midas Chatzidus until they've gotten a good few years in of just completely solid focus on learning without anything else on their head. After that, see if you can move on to the Midas Chasidus. So it's important to have a perspective on that, because people are throwing the Rambam around is either coming from ignorance or from spite. I allow myself to say that, because it's ignorance if you don't realize that you have to look in the Shulchan Aruch to see, yeah, how does it come out lahalacha? And if you do know what's going on in the Shulchan Aruch and all the Paiskim, and to cite the Rambam nevertheless in a practical way, is, you'll excuse me for saying so, rishis. And in fact, I'll cite Rav Moshe Feinstein, who says it comes from people who do not, it comes from people who do not appreciate Torah. So that's a little bit strong. What can I do? I'm citing others. I wouldn't say that on my own authority.
It doesn't make it down to the Shulchan Aruch, and it means it's missing something.
The Shulchan Aruch rules otherwise. It means that it wasn't accepted la'alocha. Torah is full of machlokes rishonim, and the Shulchan Aruch rules conclusively. And it's certainly, if you look in the further paiskim, and they all spell it out the same. Okay. We move on. Now it's interesting. I'll just note that the Lemaisa, the Mephoshim, spend a lot of time discussing this subject. Because, yes, it is a fine line. The truth is that it is, to an extent, and this everybody agrees, to an extent it does compromise the honor of the Torah when it has to be supported. To an extent it does. But at the same time, the question becomes, so therefore, what's the solution? In an ideal world, people can become as great as they can possibly get while managing to sustain themselves. But if people are a little too eager to say, so therefore there shouldn't be such a thing as kollel, basically what you're saying is, let's eliminate a lot of the Torah of our generation. Yes, in an ideal world it would be that way, but at the end of the day, what do we prefer? To have that Torah or not to have that Torah? From the alumni. Must realize that learning a trade in those days was very, very far from college or high school in our days. Learning a trade in those days meant spending about 3 weeks in the 5 years you're in yeshiva doing an hour and a half a night. You have to realize that. People take it too far. Yes and no. Because part of the Chassam Sofer's, part of his stipulation before he accepted Rabbanus was that the tzibur has to support his yeshiva. It was both. He managed both. But that was one of his stipulations before he accepted Rabbanus in any town. Any place that wanted to have him as the Rav, he said, my salary comes with the yeshiva. Now, it's quite possible that he tried to have the yeshiva run on its own two legs. But he made it very clear that the yeshiva is prerequisite to him being the Rav there. Meaning, at the end of the day, there has to be Torah. If it can work by supporting itself, fine. But it's too great a value to just put all the eggs in that basket. If we appreciate what Torah is, and what Torah is to Klal Yisrael, we have to make sure it's there.
What can always be revealed that you supported by Klal Yisrael if you didn't really
have it? Yes, that's what the concept is based on. Although one could argue that there it's Gzeras HaKasam that they get Truma. What does it mean that they were supported? They got Truma, Smeisers, the Kabbanis, etc. But yes, that is a basis for the concept of what we're talking about. Okay. That's one of the things that the many of the Paiskim can note, that the Rambam himself kind of backtracks in another halacha and says that just like Shevet Levi were supported by Klal Yisrael and completely dedicated themselves to Hashem, any person who chooses to be of Shevet Levi, the way the Rambam puts it is, and to cast off all concerns of his material affairs, Hashem will send. It's a little vague, not clear what the Rambam means. He doesn't say people will support him. He says Hashem will send support for him b'derech neis of a fellow. Miraculously, Hashem will make sure he's provided for. The Paiskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, also discusses at length that the Rambam himself is opening up a little bit of leeway for the concept. But there's no question that anybody with eyes in their head We know that today, so much of the Torah that we have in our generation, so much of the teaching that's going on, so much of the kiruv that's going on, it would be completely impossible without the phenomenon of, now, if people were greater as they were there other times, that a person can do back-breaking wood chopping and yet become a Hillel HaZaken. Okay, fine. But we have to know where we stand. And the Maharal gives a bit of an interesting twist on this, because at the end of the day, it is a sensitive subject. It is a sensitive subject. And lucky is the person who can rise above it and manage to actually do both in the perfect way. The Maharal says a couple of interesting twists here. He says, first of all, it's important to realize, the Maharal says, that a person who's dependent on others is lacking in the concept of what being a person is. A person should be, the way he puts it is, chai. Chai. Living. What is the word chai? Chai means a person who's self-sufficient. Life is meant to be self-sufficient. Where does that come from? Where do we find the term chayim? About a spring. Right? A spring as opposed to a pit. A spring that generates its own water is called mayim chayim. A pit that just has water fall into it is not. Life, living, means being self-sufficient. And therefore he says, that any person who's dependent upon others is missing to an extent the hashlamas tzuras ha'adam, meaning the true form of what a human being is supposed to be. Now, of course, this has to be qualified, because there is no such thing as a person who completely doesn't depend on others. Everybody has interaction in some way, right? Just what? The question is, make sure that you are on the higher giving end. Rav Dessler has a long discussion about this. A person who wants to reach the ultimate paradigm of what a human being is meant to be should be on the giving end, not on the receiving end. Now again, everybody gives and receives to an extent. If you're married, you're giving and receiving. Of course, this world is meant, Klal Yisrael is meant to be one big interactive system. There's no question about that. But it's each person's personal challenge to make sure that he is giving much more than he's receiving. And therefore, the Maharal says a couple of things. First of all, and Meiri says this too, when we talk about a person receiving in order to learn Torah, so a grocer also receives, but he gives bread, right? Everybody in their business works that way. So he says, a person must endeavor to be in a situation where he is giving more than he's receiving. And therefore, for example, the Poskim also draw that distinction. Accepting from a person's talmidim is a whole different story. Because you're giving them more than you're receiving. But also more than that, the Maharal says, and also other Mepharshim say, God says this is very strong. But I forgot who. Maybe the Maharsha. But he says that sometimes when a person is on the right level, or put it this way, when the people are on the right level, people appreciate that supporting Torah is actually a merit for themselves. And therefore, the Maharal says this too, a person can reach a situation, meaning there will be no problem to accept the support when the situation is such that the person who's giving it realizes, giving it with the realization that he is simply gaining himself a merit by taking it, and that the sage who's accepting the money is actually granting him a gift. Because if it's done in this way, then it's actually ideal, Maharal says. If it's done in this way, it's actually ideal. That by taking the money, I'm granting you the right to have a share in my learning. And therefore, for example, they note that it's very literal, the example of Elisha. What was the story of Elisha? Elisha, what did she provide for him? She gave him a bed and a table and a chair. What's the significance, and a lamp? What's the significance of the fact that she gave him his own table? The significance is, he stayed in his attic. He didn't even come down to eat to them. He took the food from her, but ate it in his own quarters. it was below him to come down. He remained aloof. He took it from them from an aloof standpoint, meaning in a, if we'll almost call it a condescending way, I'm willing to accept what you're giving to me. In such a way, he's actually granting to them by taking. So, when the whole or is being done in such a way, the truth, or in other words, when Klal Yisrael is at a situation when they appreciate that this is how it is, also the problem is not a problem. It's interesting that Rav Shach was at one time, when Begin first took power, it was a big turnover in the whole scene of Israeli politics, because up till then it was the leftists, were extremely anti-religious. Finally, there was somebody who was a little bit sympathetic towards religion. So Begin announced, so Shlomo Lawrence was the one from representatives at the time. So he was trying to gain a little bit more sympathy for the yeshivas. So Begin announced, from now on, I'm going to provide, the government is going to completely cover the yeshivas' budgets. And Lawrence couldn't believe it. He was hoping, today they have to fight tooth and nail for peanuts, and then they get bad mouth that all they're into is money. So Begin said the yeshiva's budgets are going to be completely covered by the government. So Lawrence was sure this is the greatest thing that ever happened. He came back to Rav Shach, and Rav Shach said, well, very nice, but no more. I forgot the percent. It was either said a quarter or a third. I think it was a third, I'm not sure. He said, no more than a third. Even if he's willing to give the whole thing, no more than a third. He said, for three reasons. But first of all, some were more pragmatic, some were more on principle. First of all, he said, well, yeshivas are going to become rusty as far as raising funds go. And when the government switches around again, they're going to be in trouble. Number two, he said, and listen to this. Number two, he said, yeshivas are not a private enterprise. Yeshivas are the asset of Klal Yisrael, and the situation always must be such that the yeshivas are available for Klal Yisrael to support. We can't give the government exclusive rights to support the yeshivas. Yes, the Rosh Yeshivas have to drag themselves all around the world in order to provide all of Klal Yisrael with the merit of supporting yeshivas, because it's essential to Klal Yisrael's welfare. So no, if we're to have somebody who will come and say, I'll support all the yeshivas, we don't want that. We want the yeshivas to be a Klal Yisrael asset. That was number two. And number three, he said, this we see with what's going on around us today, he said once the government is providing all the funds for the yeshivas and the yeshivas are completely dependent, the government will begin mixing into the yeshivas' affairs and telling them what to do. This, you don't have to go very far to see this happening today. Yeshivas will remain as they always have been, and just as the communists couldn't defeat the concept, the disloyal among us won't defeat the concept either. We'll maintain our independence. Okay. What? What's that? First of all, if a king offered help, you couldn't refuse. There was no choice. Second of all, there was still plenty to do besides that. Okay, we move on. Vatayma Elisha. Back to Elisha's hostess, the Shunamis. Vatayma Elisha. She told her husband, the Shunamis, Hineina yodati ki isha lekim kadoshu. Behold, I know that he is a man of God. He's kadosh. Omar Rabbi Yosi ben Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yosi ben Rabbi Chanina said, Mikan shel isha. This shows us that women, makeres ba'orchin yoser mino ish. They discern. They can see the nature of guests better than the man can. See that she was able to pick on the full extent of Elisha's Ketusha more than her husband was. Kadeshu. So she was able to declare he's Kadesh. Vina yada. How did she know? So Rabbi Shmuel. They both offered an opinion. Chad Oma once said, Shelei ruaso zivuv oiver al shulchanai. she never saw a fly pass over his table. Meaning, even when there were flies in the air, where he ate, there were never flies. The Mephoshim point out that this is reminiscent. What? He was upstairs, it's true. That's right. She still saw. She was upstairs serving him. She was taking care of things. But the Mephoshim say, this is reminiscent of the Beis HaMikdash. This is how it worked in the Beis HaMikdash too. Here you mamish see the concept that a shulchan of a Talmud Chacham is like a mizbeach. Miracle that happened in the Beis HaMikdash happened at his table. Echad amar, and the other says, Sadin shel pishton hitziah al mitasa. She would make his bed with a sheet of linen, velayraso keriolo, and she never saw semen on it. I mean, he never had any mission. Okay, so these were the two signs by which she began understanding that she's dealing with someone of a more sublime level. What's that? Presumably he was, but he wasn't traveling with his wife. Kadoshu. Now she's stressed. He is Kadosh. The Gemara notes the emphasis on the he, implying that someone else is not. Omer Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina said, Hu Kadosh? He is Kadosh. Omeshar say Einoi Kadosh. But his attendant is not Kadosh. Remember what Elisha's attendant was? Yeah, he went in the, down in the Hall of Fame for his antics. Gehazi. So, yeah, he ended up going off. But even beforehand, she already discerned that he wasn't who knows what. How's that? Vayigash Gehazi lahadfa. But it says that at one point she came running after Elisha and she fell at his feet. And when she had a child, after many years of childlessness, she had a child because of Elisha's blessing. That child died as a child. So she came running after Elisha complaining. Warranty. So she fell at his feet. And Vayigash Gehazi lahagfa. Gehazi, Elisha's attendant, came to push her away. Omer Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina says, She'achza b'hoid yafya. He pushed her at her feminine place. Meaning he pushed her by the breasts. And she already felt in his touch that it was more than just a technical pushing away. She felt a certain over-enthusiasm. And she discerns that Elisha is on one planet, Gehazi is on quite another. Now, just the Gra notes that the two examples that we gave of his Kedusha, the fact that there was never a fly at his table, and the fact that there wasn't semen on his sheet, the Gra says those are the main two areas where Kedusha manifests. Eating, and issues of erva, tzniyas. Because those are the two areas where people can most sink in and completely connect to their base elements. So it's dafka there that she noticed his refinement, which manifested with signs of Kedusha. Oiver oleinu tamid. And then she tells her husband, he passes by us always. The Gemara learns tamid a bit differently. Omar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Kameareach Talmid Chacham Misoich Vesoi. When a person hosts a Talmid Chacham in his home, Omehaneu Minachosam, and he gives to him of his possessions, Maaleolav Akosu Kilu Makriv Tmeinim. Feed the Talmid Chacham, the Pasuk considers it as though he is bringing Tmeinim. It's like bringing Karbanis. Okay. Fine. We're finished with that discussion. So, Oive Aleinu Tamid, he passes by us. The Gemara is not saying passes by us always, but he passes by us like a Tamid. Meaning, whenever he passes by, we have an opportunity to offer a Tamid, offer a Karban. Okay. Fine, we're finished with the sugya of Elisha. Now we're moving on to some other halachas of davening. Back to our original subjects. Omer Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov al yamoid odom b'mokrim gavoya v'yispalo. A person should not stand on an elevated surface and daven. Elo b'mokrim nomuch v'yispalo. Rather, one should stand on a low space, a low place, and daven. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, mima'amakim kirosicho Hashem. From the low places, I call out to you, Hashem. Tanya namihochi, we have a brisa corroborating this. Lo yamoid odom lo al gabe kise. A person should not stand up on a chair. Lo al gabe shrapshrov, not on a stool. Veloy b'mokem gavoya, not on any other elevated surface, the ispalel. And Davin, elo b'mokem nomuch the ispalel. Rather, should stand on a low spot and Davin. Why? Lefishein gavus lefne amokem. Because there is no height before Hashem. Meaning, simply understood, don't show a height before Hashem. Don't put yourself up in the presence of Hashem. When you're in the presence of Hashem, stay low down. No audience. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, mima'amakim kroasicho Hashem. From the depths I call out to you, Hashem. Uksim, it says in the pasuk, tfilo le'oni kiyatot. Tfilo of an oni as he passes out. Meaning, we dive into Hashem in a state of complete humility, subduedness. So yes, this is the halacha. It's just usually not so relevant, but something to keep in mind, the person should not stand on any elevated surface in Davin. Unless there are some qualifications that are drawn though. For example, there are some shuls where the Amud is higher up. So that the place can say, when a person is standing in a high place in order to be able to convey his voice to the Tzibor, that's certainly permitted. Also, more than that, anytime it's for the purposes of the tzibor, for example, let's say a gabbai is davening by the bima. Bima is a lot of times a few steps up. Davening by the bima because he needs to, maybe he needs to give a clap or make announcements. That's also okay. A person is doing it for the purposes of the tzibor, that's okay. But otherwise, a person should not stand on an elevated spot. If they have to wonder, what about davening on the second floor? There's a snashim. So of course, the mafarshim say that it means an elevated distinct spot within another area, but once it's four amos wide, it's already its own area. It's not an elevated spot, it's its own area, and therefore it's okay. So the whole issue only applies to an area, an elevated area that's less than 4x4 amos, which is not going to be so common if you're not davening to the amud. The main point is, don't go daven next to the chazan by the amud if it's on an elevated surface. The Magen Avraham notes that in earlier times there was actually the chazan went down into a little pit in David. What's that? Oh yeah, they still have that? I never actually saw that. Goes a little lower. Interesting. So it said that was how it was done in earlier times. It went down, Dafka, in order to manifest that issue of Mima Makim Kro Sikh Hashem. I'll just note that there's another take on this. We said that the pshat is not to put yourself up in front of Hashem. But it's interesting that there are Rishonim that say that, no, that's not the point. The point is not that you shouldn't put yourself up before Hashem. Rather, Rashba says this, rather the idea is, when you climb up to daven to Hashem, it shows as though you're trying to get closer so He can hear you. Or you're trying to get closer to Him. We daven low down to show that Hashem wants to hear our tefillahs. He'll come down to us. There's no need for us to go climbing up. And Ein Gavus of Na'amokim, when it says, that's why I say, translated ambiguously, there's no height before Hashem. So the simple understanding is, don't you show height before Hashem. But the other, according to this understanding, it's the other way around. There's no height by Hashem, meaning Hashem is not too high. Hashem wants to come down to hear you. And we dafka manifest that by standing low. We're acknowledging Hashem is way up high, yet He's willing to kiviyachol, so to speak, bend over, stoop down in order to hear what we have to say to Him.
Just that He's willing to, or is also showing that we don't think that He's only up there?
It's both. It's both. The Mabit says both elements. That's right. Okay. The Omer Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, HaMispalel, when a person davens, Tzorich sheyechaven esraglov, you must line your feet up. Meaning, you have to have your feet straight against each other. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, Veragleihem regel yishara. It says about the Malachim, their feet is a straight foot. Which means that actually the Malachim, whatever this means, have only one leg. They only have one leg. And we daven, we manifest that by standing with our feet together as though it's just one leg. So this is something that we've been doing since we're in pre-1A. But here we're learning it in the Gemara. It's worthwhile to take a little bit of time out to actually appreciate what it is we're doing. What's the idea? Oh, we stand like Malachim. Why stand like Malachim? Are you a Malach? Why are you standing like a Malach? What's the idea here? The truth is, there's a lot of profundity to this. The Mabit discusses this at length. He says, you know what? Before we discuss why you should keep your feet together, let's discuss something before that. Why do you need to stand when you daven Shmoneh Esrei? Why do you stand? So, okay, you might answer, respect. You'll probably be right. But he says, no, there's something deeper here. He says, and before we even discuss why you have to stand for Shmoneh Esrei, let's discuss a different question. Why is it that only man stands upright? All other animals gravitate downwards. Well, except the penguin. But all other animals gravitate downwards. Even the gorilla, right? Even the apes that do stand, they kind of bend over and they sometimes find it easier to just... Why is man the only one that stands straight up? So the Mabit says, what? What's that? Ostrich also not exactly. But why is it? He says the answer is that we stand straight up because, yeah, there is a magnetic force, so to speak, pulling, a spiritual magnetic force, which makes beings gravitate to their natural realm. He says, therefore, animals are always gravitating to the ground. Because men really come from high up, and therefore their natural posture is pulling upwards. It's always amazing. I'm always blown when I see a kid reach the age where they start trying to stand. I don't know why are they doing it. It's so easy to crawl. And they're good at it. They scoot around the house. And they're trying to stand and they fall. What's the point? Why are they putting in the effort? So I always noted it's an amazing phenomenon. That, okay, Hashem puts it in them to keep trying. I see something more than that. It's somehow a person has that innate feeling of reaching for where he naturally comes from. Kid is trying to get up. He doesn't want to stay on the ground. He gets up. And that's why we stand upright. So, the Mabit says, that's the point in standing when you're davening also. What is davening about? Davening is about, we come down into this world, really we come from there. And that's where we're from. Our place is the Kisei HaKavod. Hashem sends us down into this world a few minutes, 150 years, a few minutes to get a couple of things taken care of before you go back home. Right? Now, when you're in this world, you get all busy with the material things, Hashem doesn't want you to just forget. Hashem says a couple of times a day, report back to me. Actually, what you're doing when you're davening is what you should be doing, going back to your original state. You go back home. You report back to Hashem, I go back to the upper Olamos. Yes, there's all kinds of things going on. I'm forgetting about it all. I'm going back to my real world. And therefore, sure you should stand. You're going back to where we really come from. You manifest that by standing. You stand, you're reaching upward. So, therefore, yes, the natural position a person should be in when davening, when he's connecting back to Hashem, going back to where he came from, standing. Reach for upwards. That's why also, it's interesting to note that the Arizal says that this is the top of the arm, this is the middle part, and this is the bottom. That's how the Arizal puts it down. What's the pshat? He says, because this is naturally man's position. This is the top, this is the middle, this is the bottom. We're reaching upwards. That's a man's natural position. So therefore, we stand when we daven. Now, if we understood all this, we also understand why we have our feet together. We have our feet together also, because down here on this world, we're mortals. Up there, we're like malachim and more. Certainly, when we stand in Shemana Esrei, we are manifesting our true state of just being all the way up there, just completely bound up with Hashem. So, these are halachas that we're doing every day by rote. Take a little bit of time and think about it and appreciate what we're actually doing. We'll see more on this Tuesday, B'li Nedar. Like malachim. What's that? No, that's the point. Really, we are. We're really upper beings. We're really beings of the higher world. We're really like malachim plus. We show this when we daven. Even though we're wearing a certain costume for a little bit while we're here.